Succession number 10420, Rule 40.
Colonel W.I. Watson, Reel 40. Where did you go to next, Colonel?
Well, now we are back behind the Alamein line. You may remember on the last tape, I think I recalled us coming all the way back from Darba through the Munasib Depression, which we'd wanted to look into for many days before, to a position behind the El Alamein line. Well, there we stayed for a few days until we got a warning order that on the 1st of December we should start the long journey forward from behind the El Alamein line to El Adam, a journey of roughly 370 miles. In fact, I think it was 368 miles. And it should be done in five days' journey of about 70 to 80 miles a day. And we set off, I think I'm right in saying, on the 1st of December 1942 at a speed of 15 miles in the hour and a density of 15 vehicles to the mile. It was possible then, of course, to drive to the Libyan border with headlights shining. And we had an early reveille at 5 o'clock, and we started at 7 on the 1st of December. Now, I hadn't been feeling at all well, and I knew what it was. It was jaundice. I'd been smitten by jaundice. Incidentally, I had 11 officers in the battalion, all at one time or other smitten by jaundice. It was said that the officers slept on beds and the men slept on the ground. And if only the officers had slept on the ground too, they wouldn't have experienced jaundice. Anyhow, on the 3rd of December, that's 2 days later, when we were somewhere near Mirza Matru, I started getting extremely tired. I'd have a bout of energy and then became extremely tired. And I went to the MO, and he confirmed that I had jaundice and that he would give me some dope. But if the dope didn't work, I had to go down the line to hospital. I'd been trying, as some other officers did, and I'd heard about, to fight it off and to see if it would cure itself and I could go on, but it was to no avail. Now, on this third day, the campsite where we were detailed to spend the night, to me, was very suspicious that if should it rain, we'd have a very wet campsite indeed. The reason I came to that conclusion was that there were mud pans, you might say, were very flaked because they'd been dried out by the sun. There was the staging area. I took the precaution putting my tent on a slight rise with my servant Dando, but there was not much to choose for the battalion. Now, just before dusk, the most terrific rainstorm that I have ever known blew up from the southwest, accompanied by a gale force wind with thunder and lightning. I never saw rain like it. I don't think I've ever seen rain pour down as it did that night. Of course, it was dark. And for about an hour and a half, my good Dando and I held up my tent and dug a drainage system around it with success. Eventually, the rain stopped in the middle of the towards midnight, and in the darkness, it was just possible to see a truly sorrowful sight. I found the adjutant and battalion headquarters in bare feet pushing the headquarter truck out of a lake some 2 feet deep. The bivouac tents of the intelligence section and the signal section were just showing above the waterline, and the officer's mess, which was stuck on a slight rise, was surrounded by water a foot or so deep, and the quartermaster and his tents and staff were just in a roaring torrent. And there was really nothing one could do except keep fires lit so that everybody could be try and get as warm and dry as possible. But I must say, I felt perfectly frightful. And I felt very, very tired. And I think it was the storm, possibly, that did, in fact, break up the mole at Benghazi. I may be wrong, because there were other subsequent storms just as bad, but it was a warning of what was to come. And, of course, it stopped Monte's chase through Cyrenaica of the Germans and Italians.
About what time is this coming? What date? About what date?
It was on the 3rd of December, 1942. Well, then the next day, of course, the sun came out in all its glory, and it started to dry things up, and all ranks could go and bathe, because we weren't all that far from the sea. And I took the opportunity to motor into Mirza Matru, which really was a pathetic sight. There was barely, it's a little harbour, but there was barely a building standing which hadn't been damaged by bombs and shell fire, and there were derelicts everywhere. I moved right round the town, and the only house that really was of any use was occupied by the Royal Navy and had the white ensign flying above it. And I was also told, I think by my good Andrew Clark, commanding the 9th Battalion, that there was that the large Axis cemetery, German cemetery there, the crosses had been taken out of the British cemetery at Tobruk and repainted and used by the Germans, and you could still see the names of the British soldier underneath the white paint on which the German names had been painted. But I can't vouch for that, but good old Andrew Clark had told me that that was the case. And as I say, the white ensign was the only building, flying above the only building that was really habitable. I went to the doctor in the evening, in the afternoon, and he said, "You must go back to hospital." And I felt pretty rotten. I was quite yellow, primrose yellow almost, and so I reported to the brigadier and said, "The doctor told me I must go back to hospital." And on the 5th of December, I handed over to Dick Ovenden, and I really did feel rotten, and I drove to the advanced dressing station with my good friend, the doctor, who was then called Rumney, and I was put on an ambulance train, and eventually I arrived at the General Hospital on the canal zone, not far from the Suez Canal itself. And from the 5th of December to the 15th of December, 10 days, I was in bed. The yellowness started to disappear. I was not allowed to eat fat, and I had to continually suck boiled sweets and have sugar. And I was in a room with one other, and he was called Captain White, who was in the Royal Army Dental Corps, and he too was suffering from jaundice, as were most of the other officer patients, all suffering from jaundice. I was in bed the whole time, but on the 16th of December, according to my notes, I got up and I was allowed to potter around the ward. And on the 19th, 3 days later, I took a walk to the Suez Canal, which wasn't far away, and I watched for a while some Egyptian troopers. I think they must have been Egyptian border police, but they were practicing mounting and dismounting camels, which intrigued me no end, on the banks of the Suez Canal. However, just before Christmas, on the 22nd of December, I was discharged and given 14 days leave. And I went to Lady Lamson's convalescent home for officers in Cairo. Lady Lamson was the wife of the British ambassador. And this splendid place was run by a remarkable old woman called Mrs. Doughty Wiley. And she allowed you to go out and have an enjoyable time, provided you were back, I think, by about 1 o'clock in the morning. So for 14 days over Christmas and the New Year, I had a really splendid social time with many friends. My friends primarily were officers in the Northumberland Yeomanry. Of course, my great friend was Philip Pease, and he lived in the old, his son lives now still in the family home only just 3 miles from where we're sitting. And it was through him and his friends that I had this splendid social time. There was in Cairo at that time a splendid club for British officers called the Turf Club. It was exactly like a really good first-class British club in London. And despite the fact that it survived the war, it never really deteriorated in any way. If you wanted to take a lady to dine there, she would have to come in side entrance and not into the club itself. And you took her up to the roof where you dined, and in the summer it was all open and you could look over all the lights of Cairo. And if it was in the winter, you had a carpeting all around it and a carpeting roof on a frame, and you dined there in comfort. And there was no question about you not being properly dressed. In the summer, you were allowed, towards the end of the war, or when I was there, to wear what was known as shirt sleeves order. You could wear your shirt sleeves and, of course, long trousers. And you had to have your sleeves turned down and buttoned. You had to wear a tie, and you had to wear a Sam Brown belt. And in the winter, you wore service dress with your Sam Brown belt if you were dining there. But on my last day, I went alone to have my evening meal there before setting off on the long journey back to rejoin the battalion. And I kept a note of the menu. Now, I started my evening meal, my last meal, which was on a meatless day. There were meatless days in Cairo, throughout Cairo, during the week, and this was a meatless day. And I started with sherry soup. I then went on to place with spinach and egg. I then had a strawberry flan with fresh strawberries with cream and wine sauce. I had a Turkish savory, Turkish coffee, dessert, and old brandy. And that was my last meal in the Turf Club on this occasion, when I had 14 days leave recovering from jaundice.
What was the atmosphere like in Cairo?
Oh, it was, in the tub. Oh, just like an ordinary English tub. The if you went down to the billiard room in the down in the basement, there was a stuffed trout. I remember the stuffed trout. Whenever you went down into the basement to the billiard room, everybody behaved properly. There was leather armchairs and that sort of thing. And on the stairs were some very fine portraits of various British generals going back for many years. But at the time of the Suez Crisis, the whole place was burnt down, as was Shepherd's Hotel.
The war seemed
miles away. Miles away, except that there were all, the place was full of soldiers, officers. But they all knew how to behave. And it was really wonderful how it survived the war.
How did you feel about the Egyptians? Were they friendly toward you or did you get in
contact with them? The Egyptians. Well, it all depends if they were. If they were Copts, i.e., Christian Egyptians, and. You might say high class, they were very pleasant, could be very pleasant. I knew one or two women folk who were ordinary pleasant and would join in the fun just like any English woman. But there weren't many. But the English women that were there gave dances and passes and things like that for the likes of me, bachelor. And they had, there were a lot of widows, of course, out there too. But this was a really typical English town. And I later on, when I went back, I took a girl there out to dinner very frequently. I know her still. She's not married. And she comes and stays there to this day. And we're both the aged, as you might say. But I used to take her to dine there. But she couldn't come into the town. She had to come in the back door. Oh, you felt it had done you a lot of good. Of course I was, yes. But I knew I'd got the 14 days. And I had to enjoy myself to the best of my ability. And there was also the Gezira Club, it was a sporting club where they had to play cricket, golf, squash, and there was a race course. And that meant you would go there and you would have a meal. You would have a very good meal on a Sunday there. Go right down the cold table, it was a super ham and tongue. And everything on a Sunday. But it did get rather cheap towards the end. And a certain number of Egyptians were allowed into the primary buildings and the bathing pool. And sit under the trees and watch them there, getting cricket. No, the lighting was all gone. There were at times because of well, of course, when Rommel got towards the the outskirts of Alexandria, then there was a row of anyhow, that was the meal I had on my last evening, my leave after Saunders. And on the 5th of January, into the new year, I had got my 1500 weight cut from the battalion, Mill Adam, to come all the way to Cairo, pick me up in Dando, my servant, and Woods was then driving the 1500 weight cut. He picked me up on the 5th of January, and we started the long journey back. And an interesting journey there, all the way to join the camp. I also took a cab with me, called Weber, and he was the signal officer of our 74th Field Regiment, and he too had been subject to jaundice. So he came in my, joined me in my 1500 group. And I also took 500 eggs, which I got from my friend Philip Beatty. I took them all the way back. I got them right to the very end of the journey, and not one was broken. Now, you've got to remember now, I had no Greek. Greek hadn't been missing, nor had I a staff, both of which I was thinking of before I got to the end of the journey. I'd been issued with a Greek and a staff. I only had a 1,500 set off. Goes out into the Mediterranean. And either you can go right around the coast of the Darwin, and around the coast of the Mediterranean, or you can also work your way through the land which comprises that continent, or you can capture the right way across. Now, the 1-5-1 brigade had left there in Adam and had come across the desert and had been caught in the most appalling weather. It had been bogged down.